Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in company's profile. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for the weekend edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast The KE Report. I do want to, as always, kind of at the start of these shows, recap what we were seeing throughout this week in terms of economic data. We also have to talk about Fed speak and what the markets have done. I'm kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at The Money Show. Now, Mike, look, we were beaten over the head throughout the last few weeks with this whole debt ceiling debate. It caused a little bit of volatility in the markets, but overall, markets just continued to grind sideways. We're recording this on Friday, and look, it looks like the debt ceiling is now behind us. So, Mike, in terms of big picture outlooks, what comes next? What do people worry about next for these markets?
Sure. You know, it's funny about this whole debt ceiling thing. I mean, you know, you go back to 2011 when we had the big crisis back then, and that's when Congress, the president at the time, really did try and push things too far. And then it was a whoops, the market's down, what was it, I think 17% in a week and a half, you know, from high to low. And that taught everybody, Republicans, Democrats, you know, anybody on any end of the political spectrum, what happens when you really do take this thing too far. So what's happened since then? Markets taught politicians a lesson. Politicians still like to pretend that there's not going to be something and they're not going to cave in the end. But what happens every time? They cave in the end because, you know, they own stocks too, and so do their constituents, and they don't want to get an earful saying, hey, you just crashed the Dow Jones 10,000 points. What's wrong with you? So I think that it's not surprising that as we're talking, the sort of elements of yet another debt ceiling cave are coming together. Probably going to be some spending changes, probably going to be some, you know, side deals in it and so on and so forth. But, you know, surprise, surprise, here we are, and it's going to be some kind of deal. I don't think that should be surprising at all. I mean, really, that's the lesson that Wall Street and you know, has taught Main Street and has taught Washington over the years. So that doesn't surprise me. I think you talk about what's the shift next. Well, you know, the economy is still going to be on people's minds. There's still concerns, you know, has the yield curve been telling us a recession is coming? Has the Fed gone too far? And some, you know, other questions related to that. So I think what's naturally going to happen is people are going to shift to the Fed and the economy. My take is that the Fed probably is done. I suppose they could maybe squeeze out one more June hike. I don't think they should, but then again, nobody at the Echoes building in D.C. calls me before they make their interest rate decision, but that, you know, that's neither here nor there. I don't think they should. I think there's a chance they will, but I think the Fed is pretty much at the end of its cycle now, given that inflation, while not being where they want it to be, has been coming down, or at least the rate of change in inflation has been coming down. So I think they're achieving some of the goals they wanted to. And, you know, you do have some concerns about the banking sector and just tighter credit and so on, plus interest-sensitive sectors of the economy cooling down and this, you know, and all of that. So I think we're probably pretty close to the end of that cycle. And I think when it comes to the economy, you know, there's been a lot of talk, especially amongst the people that speak at our conferences, our live conferences, our virtual events, and so on. A lot of the experts have talked about the theory of a rolling recession, where you have this situation where certain sectors of the economy are weak, certain are strong at different points in the cycle, partially as a result of what the Fed's been doing, partially as a result of the recovery, and, you know, and that now and then the stimulus running out from post-COVID and so on. So you get, you know, you get times when certain sectors are doing better than others, but you don't have this whole meltdown economy-wide. And I actually tend to think that that looks pretty much like what we've seen, right? I mean, we've seen various sectors like housing and autos slow at different points in the cycle, but at other times, you know, there's been things like tech to jump in and pick up the torch, so to speak. So I think that it's going to be an economic environment that's not fantastic, but also not terrible. On the interest rate side, it's going to be a Fed that's going to be moving to the sidelines if they have not done so already. And in this environment, you and I, we've talked for a long time. I've really enjoyed doing segments with you guys. And, you know, I kind of shifted from that, you know, be boring stance last year and really for a full 18 months where it was, hey, be defensive, be boring. The more boring your portfolio is, the better off you'll be, to more of a be bold approach. You know, focus on more offensive sectors than defensive. Get more aggressive with some of your bargain hunting versus hoarding cash. And look what's happened this year. I mean, the market overall, especially sectors like tech, which I would put definitely in the bold category, have done very, very well.
Mike, I give you the utmost credit because, yeah, as we chatted for over a year, you were saying be defensive, play some of the safer sectors. And then this year, you, along with a couple of other of our guests, switched and you played the market to the upside then as the market has rebounded. But to that point, look, the breath has been very concentrated on a few stocks, and that kind of leads to what the Fed's going to do. It doesn't seem like we're going to get this inflow of free or cheap money anymore that drove markets for a decade plus. Does that mean that the upside for markets is still somewhat limited if we're not going to have that uber dovish Fed that we had for a while there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you look at some sectors outside of tech, you look at small caps and so on, I mean, it definitely hasn't been a great year. You know, you're flatlined down a little bit in a couple of these sectors. You're up a couple percentage points in others, but it's certainly not having the blowout performance like you're seeing in big tech. And I think that that speaks to the fact that this is not a great economic environment. I mean, this is not, you know, a total throw caution to the wind. Everything's wonderful. Fed's cutting. Money's coming in. You know, throw a party like you had, especially when all the stimulus was being thrown at the economy and the markets post-COVID. But again, that, you know, that doesn't mean that you can't still invest in bold sectors and outperform and do well. So I don't want to suggest that everything's coming up roses, but when the Fed shifts, even if it doesn't shift to cutting, if the Fed just moves to the sidelines, that's, you know, that takes a big sort of headwind out of the way of the markets, right? You know, the Fed going from tightening tighter money to just, hey, you know, you guys have fun, we're going to go, you know, take a siesta here. That's, you know, that is all else being equal, an improvement in terms of the macro backdrop. If the economy does not totally fall into the toilet, and you just have some sectors that are weak while others are strong or decent from time to time, you know, that is a great opportunity for stock picking and for sector selection, you know, as opposed to a full-on bearish market environment, which is what we had last year, where pretty much nothing was working, so except outside of energy. So I think that that's, again, is the environment fantastic? No, but it's better, and I think that, you know, it has been better for 6, 7, 8 months now. The market's been telling you that. If you look at the performance by sector, it has a much more offensive sort of, you know, offensive tone to it than defensive like we had for a long time. And, you know, it's worth noting that even in this market environment, other things that are traditional good hedges and good investments, when the Fed moves to the sideline and the U.S. dollar stops going up every day, things like gold are doing well, too. I mean, GLD, the gold's up 7-8%, give or take, year to date, which is not a bad performance, especially in light of the fact that it held steady last year while the markets fell 18, 19, 20%. So, again, you know, it doesn't mean, as part of the, I probably amend my thesis from be bold to be bold and still own gold. It's a little fun there with the rhyming, but it's true. I mean, you know, that still has an important part in that person's portfolio, despite the fact that, you know, we don't have an overall bearish environment for stocks.
You are right, Mike. We don't have this bearish market for stocks that we had last year, and I think that's what a lot of people are still hanging on to. Everyone does remember just that grind lower from last year, and it seems like a lot of people are waiting for that one capitulation event where stocks just drop and there's nothing we can do about it. Last year, we didn't have any limit down days, and remember what we had in 2020 during COVID, we were limiting out in the first couple hours of trading. So I think it's just such a different environment, which has actually made it more interesting this year. and last year for all investors, but boy, oh boy, it's not an easy environment right now. But hey, Mike, we're out of time. We're having you back on next segment. Everyone stick around. We're going to be right back with Mike Larson.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at TeamG'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. TeamG'day.com. TeamG'day.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
You're
weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. We are continuing to chat with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at The Money Show. Now, Mike, to me, this sounds like a much more balanced and good market where you can get yield, you can balance some of your portfolio with dividend yielding assets, but then you can also look for some of the stocks that outperform. What does that mean for investors then? Do you need to be more active, more aggressive, or do you need to allocate some money to the broad averages and put some of your money into high yielding instruments?
Sure. I think it is a healthier environment. I mean, you go back a couple of years, one of the things that had me so worried was in this 0% yield environment, so much money was being thrown at so many dumb companies, profitless tech firms, IPOs, SPACs, all that garbage. You had so much money chasing just extreme high risk type assets because there was no alternative. It was too easy of a money environment. It was too silly, too aggressive, and so on. What you have now, and we flushed all of that junk out of the system, right? I mean, that was one of the reasons I was so defensive, is that SPACs were crashing and burning, no profit tech companies were failing, the IPO market dried up, and on and on. It was very much like the dot-com bust period. And even big tech obviously suffered as small tech had all those problems. But once you clean all that garbage out of the system and you lay the groundwork for a healthier market, the kind of environment we're seeing now is what happens. That's, you know, again, you squeezed a lot of those excesses out. You have a situation where, you know, people can, if they want to, just prudently sit in cash and earn a decent return instead of just throwing money at every stupid idea that comes down the pike from Wall Street. I think it is a more reasonable, more healthy, typical, normal kind of market environment where, yes, if you're out there, you do the work, you can find promising investments. It's not just something where you blindly throw money into the market because you can't earn anything anywhere else. And frankly, we should be happy with that kind of backdrop. I think it is a productive, more constructive environment now, certainly, than we had 2 years ago.
Well, Mike, when you look at the market breadth, there is some concerns from some investors that there really are a lot of sectors not participating, and there are a dozen stocks crowded at the top of the S&P 100 that are really carrying the indexes. So big tech has become its own safe haven in a way. And if you look at what's happened in NVIDIA with AI, and if you look at what's happened with Microsoft and Amazon and Apple, these stocks are carrying the day. But if you look at the rest of the stocks and indexes, it's painting a different story. Do you see it being this bifurcated market maybe being a sign of sickness under the surface, or do you think that eventually other sectors will get the love when people filter out of these big mega tech stocks?
I think your second option is most likely what's going to happen. I mean, has tech come too far too fast? Absolutely. I mean, let's be honest. You can't continue to have this kind of performance with nothing else participating. So if anything, we're going to see a breather. We're going to see that sector, take some time off and you pass the torch elsewhere. I mean, last year it was energy that was the only thing going up while everything else was going down. Now energy's consolidating and, not doing very well this year, but that's what happened. You have big runs, you have, strong performance in one sector, and then you take quite some time to digest it. So I think we'll see that in tech, and I think we will see the market broaden out, especially if we get to the point where the Fed truly, everybody knows they're on the sidelines, and people can look at the economic data and say, okay, it's not great, but it's not terrible either. So I think the one thing holding people back is that there are those economic and Fed concerns. If we can resolve those, you're going to see tech take a breather, you're going to see money broaden out, and I think you're going to have a stronger back half of the year performance in a lot of these things that have lagged. So put me in the camp for it's going to broaden out while tech takes a breather, whereas a couple years ago, given the absolute ridiculousness in tech, I was much more worried about the opposite happening. Tech gives up the ghost and other sectors don't take up the lead, which is what happened in 2022.
What do you think drives markets in terms of the balance between economic data, and that carries over obviously to Fed policy, but if the Fed's going to be paused for a period of time, we balance out economic data with earnings or company-specific news that could actually drive stocks. Maybe people switch back their focus less from what the Fed's going to do, more to what stocks are doing. What do you think should be the focus for investors then?
I think the overall earnings picture is not all that bad. I mean, you know, obviously the big story is when you get an NVIDIA come out and have this hugely powerful report, and it drives the, you know, what, their market cap up $200 billion in a day or whatever the number was. I mean, that's going to grab headlines. It's going to get people talking about froth and this, that, and the other. But that's the real outlier. If you look at the broader earnings picture for the S&P 500 as a whole, you know, you have a lot of other companies that are at least meeting or slightly beating numbers, as opposed to everybody missing or only a handful of companies having these blowout results like NVIDIA. So I think that the overall earnings picture, again, it's not that bad. And you know, that is saying something given all the things that have been thrown at this market. You know, even some sectors, gosh, was there even things like Toll Brothers, the home builder, the luxury home builder, had blowout numbers. And that's in an environment where mortgage rates are closing on 7% again. So I think, you know, it's proof that there is still some resilience. There's still some, you know, decent backdrop and kind of environment. And again, that's the kind of situation that I think is just not, doesn't make for a terrible, terrible market environment. It doesn't make for one of these environments where you really have to hunker down and hide, which is what you had to do in the back half of 2021 and pretty much throughout 2022.
So, Mike, you brought up NVIDIA. I do have to ask you then, what do you think about this whole narrative around this potential AI bubble? It's definitely driven tech stocks. Clearly, there's money for it. Are we in an AI bubble?
You know, I think it's hard to say, because it's one of these things where you've got promise, you've got a real story and a thing that is going to, you know, I don't want to say change the world, but it's going to have big impacts in a lot of different industries. But absolutely, sentiment gets carried away sometimes. Absolutely, you've got moves that, you know, you can't really fundamentally justify given the news being good, but is it really that good? So sure, there's going to be companies that are going to, you know, how many times have we seen this cycle, you know, whether it was blockchain not too long ago or the internet in general 20 plus years ago, and so on.
It's a story, right? Everyone likes a new story. It's exciting.
It's a story. You're going to have companies that are going to throw AI in a press release just to see if they can juice their stock 5% on the day. I mean, it's going to go through a cycle, and then some of these companies are going to crash and burn, and the ones that are really using AI for real businesses and, you know, real growth are going to come out of it stronger. So, it's a cycle that you just have, you know, you can play it if you're a super aggressive trader. There are some longer term names that I think have promise. It's just, you got to make sure you don't get yourself carried away.
Well, Mike, are there any sectors that you see as being a dark horse that comes from behind and surprise investors this year, where you're seeing some relative strength, but maybe people haven't picked up on it yet?
You know, I think that the foreign stocks in particular, emerging markets, some names there, I think that that's one of those things where domestic, meaning U.S., companies and U.S. stocks have so wildly outperformed for such a long time that a lot of U.S.-based investors aren't really thinking about ways they can profit in foreign markets. But we've already seen, you know, and this is something that I'm seeing talk about in some of our expert speakers, so it really alerts me to it, and that's why I'm thinking about it. So, you know, markets like Japan that have been left for dead forever are now coming back, and you've got some other foreign markets where valuations are so compelling that if the Fed moves to the sideline, we don't have this, you know, relentless rally in the U.S. dollar that we had all last year. Those are going to be some places to look. So I think that you're going to see gradually some more money, you know, get outside U.S. borders and try and profit in some of these foreign markets over the next couple of years.
All right, we're out of time, Mike, but man, always great hearing from you. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us on our show. We'll chat again soon.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com. or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
USA News Update. The Memorial Day weekend rush is underway, and the TSA says it expects to screen about 10 million passengers by the end of the holiday. Still no word yet on a deal to raise the federal debt ceiling. Last night, President Biden saying he was hopeful we'll know by tonight if a deal has been reached. A South Carolina judge temporarily blocking the state's new six-week abortion ban. Governor Henry McMaster signed the restriction into law on Thursday, saying it would save the lives of unborn children. On Friday, Circuit Court Judge Clifton Newman put that new law on temporary hold until the state Supreme Court could determine if it's constitutional. The White House rolling out a new national strategy to fight anti-Semitism. The Biden administration says the new initiative released this week is unprecedented in scope as anti-Jewish crime is surging. Corey Myers, USA News.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get cloudy. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control. And priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we are going to focus a little bit more on the resource stock sector as we are chatting with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Now, Matt, look, since we're focusing on the resource stocks, and I know how much you focus on some of the juniors, even mid-tiers, and a lot of our audience also focused on those companies, I'm not going to beat around the bush here because, quite frankly, the price action in these juniors has been very disappointing when you consider what the mid-tiers have done over that about 6 to 7 to 8 month rebound. The juniors, a number of them really haven't done much, and unfortunately now we have seen this financing window all but dry up for these juniors. So if they don't have cash in the bank, I don't know how some of them are even going to get their drill programs done for this year. Since we are in spring, pretty much in summer, too. A lot of people are already talking about the summer doldrums. Matt, what do you think about juniors, the way they're setting up to move into this summer? Is it going to be a summer of pain ahead?
Well, good morning, Corey, and thanks for having me back on the program. Always good to speak with you and Chad.
Yes, I would definitely agree that financing activity has slowed markedly in the past, we'll say, couple 2 to 3 weeks here. Just look back to late March, early April, when we saw the gold price break above 2,000 and silver rally in its wake. And there was multiple deals being announced per day, and I should say probably half a dozen deals per day. We've seen that dry up quite markedly as we head into the summer. So I do agree with that. In terms of the share prices of the junior complex at large, I would say that that's likely going to be linked here, at least in the very immediate term, to the broader market. And I actually think they could potentially do well this summer if we don't see that next major risk-off move in the broader markets. If/when we do see that move, and we will see it at some point here, the juniors will be hit, as they always are. So that has to be taken as an assumption. But it is worth noting that going back to the mid-1980s, there have been 6 clear rate hike cycles, market rate hike cycles. And in each case, the market rallied upon the pause. And it's worth noting we haven't even seen the pause in this cycle yet. Perhaps we will at this upcoming meeting. I think it's very likely we do. But in each of the past 6 instances, the market rallied quite substantially upon the pause. And actually, in 5 of those 6 instances, the market actually went on to rally towards to all-time highs. The exception was the dot-com bust in 2000. And at that point, we saw the market only rally 11 or 12% from the cut before beginning its March lower. So historically, actually, broader markets generally perform well upon the pause, and it can surprise to the upside. I'm not expecting for us to go to all-time highs this time around, that's for sure. But I wouldn't rule out the possibility of some strength here, at least in the very immediate term. I think if that occurs, that would be good for juniors. I mean, they're definitely, from a relative perspective, extraordinarily cheap to metal prices and the larger producers and, you know, blue chip royalty names. We have seen substantial money come into the sector, but it's been limited to the metals and the largest and most liquid of names. So there is capacity for the juniors to move.
Well, Matt, when you think about the upcoming Powell pause, which has been one of the more advertised pauses in a rate hiking cycle that we've seen, because there's social media now and there's so much news coverage of it, and we've been watching this it wasn't like this rate hiking cycle happened over years. It happened really over last year to present. So over the last, let's say, 12 to 13 months, we've seen it go from under 0.5% to over 5% as far as the Fed funds rate. So when they do get to this pause, so many markets are already looking forward and anticipating that. Do you think it's already mostly priced in this time compared to other times in the past? And even if it does get a little lift of all markets, commodities and the general markets and the cryptos all get a little lift on the pause, a lot of people are still expecting the second half of this year to be a tough economic year, that we may still face recession or at least contraction in that kind of a market. How do you think the commodities fare?
Well, I think from the broader market perspective, both of those things could be true. We could see, and we will see some pain in the broader economy and potentially some substantial pain. But I don't think that rules out a move higher in the broader markets in the immediate term here. I mean, to your point, yes, it could always be different this time. And at some point, it will be different. I'm just referencing, you know, history in these past 6 circumstances. And, you know, odds are we will probably repeat. But there's no guarantee. From a junior investor perspective, though, I think the important thing is to brace in one form or another for this next downdraft, whether it occurs in the coming few months or whether it occurs later this year, you know, after a few months of rallying post pause. And I think the way to do that is to keep enough cash to the side where you are comfortable with your existing junior resource portfolio and you can average in. So cash can provide liquidity for the risk off periods, and it can also provide some confidence to stick with your positions. Whereas if you're fully deployed, it can be very difficult to hold through some of these sharp downdrafts. So each cash weighting is going to be dependent upon the specific investor and their conviction in juniors in the near term. But I think you're getting too cute going entirely to cash in this environment and banking on there being a drawdown in the immediate term. That's not necessarily going to occur. And we know from a medium and long-term perspective that this is actually an excellent time to be deploying and to hold exposure to natural resources if you're thinking over 3, 5, or 7 year time horizons. So I would caution investors not to get too cute in terms of their exposure and try to go all in or all out the market. That's a recipe for failure in almost all cases.
So Matt, since the first question dealt a little bit with seasonality, because we are turning the corner into summer, I want to drive down even further into the junior space when we talk seasonality, because we are going to get a lot of drill programs starting back up in the Northern Hemisphere and Northern Canada, where sometimes we see some excitement come into these companies as the drill programs start, because, well, these companies are finally back to work and we will eventually get some more drill results here. I'm just not seeing a whole lot of excitement when it comes to the Golden Triangle or even some of these plays that we're running in Northern Canada and even in Alaska. What's your takeaway from, I guess, the lack of excitement around drill programs that are about to get going?
Well, I think that will come, Corey. I mean, you're right. Seasonally, we're just at the end of a window here where it's generally a good time to add to these more remote explorers with only limited access to their project on a yearly basis. So the, you know, March, April, May window is right after all results from the previous program have been reported from late last year's program, and before they can announce that drills have gotten turning at specific projects. So I think we'll see excitement build as it always does. Obviously, you know, it will depend somewhat on the context of the broader market and how juniors are faring. But we're about to get a significant number of news releases announcing the start of drilling programs, whether you're up in the Yukon or up in the Golden Triangle, as you mentioned, or other, you know, far north climes in northern Canada. And, you know, I know of companies that aren't going to be able to drill until late June or early July. And then, of course, once the rigs get turning, it takes weeks, if not months, depending on how deep and difficult the holes are, to actually drill the darn things. And then there's another, you know, multi-week delay in terms of shipping the core and then finally receiving assays. So in a lot of these cases, we're not going to see the actual drill results start coming out until August, September timeframe. So we're still quite ahead of that window, but I do anticipate, you know, in a vacuum, we will see anticipation and excitement grow as we get closer to that, you know, August, September timeframe where we can realistically expect to start seeing first results.
All very good points there, Matt. We're out of time for this segment, but we're having you back on next segment to wrap up the show. So everyone stick around. We're going to be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
All right, welcome back. Here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report, we are continuing to chat with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Now, Matt, let's talk about where your portfolio is weighted. Within the junior space, you even sent a note to us saying that, look, in some of your recent letters, you have outlined the fact that your weighting towards prospect generators and royalty companies is quite high. It provides this defensive nature of it, but some people also argue that you don't get the same upside with individual explorers. Can you share with us your theory here on your strategy, why you are so heavily weighted in prospect generators and also royalty companies?
If I'm remembering correctly, it was just under 50% of the weighted portfolio as of the last investor letter in January 2023. Was weighted to either prospect generators or royalty companies. And that number is similar, today, perhaps, marginally higher. Look, I mean, these are two different business models. I can address them one by one. I would say one similarity between the two of them is that, look, I view dilution as one of the great killers to mining investors. And one of the beauties of both of these business models is that they're built to at least mitigate dilution risk, if not take it off of the table entirely. So I think if you can support a company employing a business model which takes off one of the major risks that we face as junior mining investing investors, you're in a good place to start. Now, breaking them down one by one, I would say for the royalty names, there are really two subsets within the broader royalty space that get me particularly excited. The first is royalty companies that are focused on non-precious metal assets. So we'll say not focused on gold and silver. It just does not make sense to me that, and last I checked, 92% of the weighted market cap of metal royalty companies are companies that are focused primarily or exclusively on precious metals. And that compares, if you look at all the metal pulled out of the ground on a global basis in a given year, you'll only see gold at around 15% of the total value, and then adding silver in, you know, we're closer to 20%. And so there seems to be a clear mismatch there. There are reasons for this. The first is that there are just simply far more gold assets. The gold supply is much more diversified and fragmented than some of these other metals. So there is more opportunity, at least in terms of the overall size of the opportunity set for precious metals. But I still believe that this current skew is unsustainable. So I do like the royalty names that are focused on non-precious metal assets, often which have much longer mine lives, I should add, than your typical gold mine, which may only run 10, 15, 20 years. You know, if you look at a company like Altius Minerals, they own royalties on, you know, base and industrial metal projects that have decades, if not centuries, of potential mine life. And currently, I would say these longer mine lives are not being reflected in the cash flow multiples that we're seeing amongst the non-precious metal names. So I'm quite interested there. And then I also like the handful of royalty companies that have the in-house ability to generate their own royalties organically. And, you know, the royalty space has grown relatively large here over the past few years, as you two know. But of the dozens of companies employing the royalty business model within metals and mining, you know, really only six of them, you know, half a dozen here, have the ability to go out, stake ground, use geological expertise to generate drill targets, use their connections and reputation within the industry to attract larger name brand partners, and then have those folks spend money. And we own three of these six names. So I do find that a key differentiator from their royalty peers. The groups were, you know, if there are not royalties to be bought, they are perfectly happy sitting on their hands and exercising their business model behind the scenes as they continue to evaluate other opportunities. So those are two areas I would flag when you're looking at royalty companies. And then in terms of the prospect generators, just quickly, I mean, I like them because they're cheap and out of favor. You know, we follow a universe of about 40 prospect generators very closely. And we're talking about one of them has 100% of their market cap covered by cash and marketable securities. In other words, it's trading below its liquidation value. You know, another MJG holding has 65-70% of its market cap covered by cash and marketable securities. So these companies are valued as if they're very much out of favor. I think that presents opportunities for investors that are able to sift through the different names and select, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them to hold within a portfolio. And then I'd also add that many of these prospect generators have hidden royalty portfolios kind of in the back of their overall project portfolios. And we quite likely will see hungry junior royalty companies, you know, come on down the food chain and try to acquire these royalties in one form or another. I mean, a couple recent examples we've seen, Almadex within the past 18 months sold its Elk Gold mine royalty to Star Royalties in a one-off transaction that resulted in quite a bit of cash coming into the bank account of Almadex. And then more recently, we've seen Eagle Plains, which is a prospect generator, spin out its royalty portfolio into Eagle Royalties, and I believe that company will begin trading as soon as tomorrow, actually. So these are recent examples of prospect generators, you know, monetizing their royalty portfolios in one way or another, and I think that's a trend that we'll just see continue to gain steam.
So, Matt, with a focus on royalty companies then, especially the juniors, how do you go about valuing them? Simply because so many people put so much weight on cash flow that is now or next quarter, but a lot of these junior companies are focused more on these royalties on exploration or sometimes development plays, but development plays that are years out, and they don't seem to get a whole lot of value for those. But in all fairness, some of these companies have dozens or 100 of these other royalties that aren't paying out, and who knows when they're going to pay out. What do you put more weight on, and how do you value these junior royalty companies that, quite frankly, don't make that much money now, but there is blue sky there?
Generally, what I'll do is value them on a relative basis. Generally, price to revenue or price to cash flow relative to peers. But you also have to make sure to subtract out other assets that can be readily valued. So you want to get down to the company's enterprise value. But, I'll use Elemental Altus as an example. That's a company I'm comfortable talking about publicly. I've written about it in our past few investor letters. It's been a long-term holding of the MJG fund. On a price to revenue basis, they are markedly cheaper than their peers. And so if you just look at their generating royalties compared to where they're valued in the market, they're cheap, objectively cheap on a relative basis. But then what gets me excited is you can subtract out some of their other assets that are 100% owned. So for instance, they own a land package right next to the Sadiola mine in Mali, which is being restarted by Allied Gold. I'm quite confident that that's going to be monetized in one form or another, with Elemental Altus receiving a royalty and some other compensation on top of that. They have 100% owned ground in Egypt, which is currently coming for free from the market cap. I think that could be valued in the tens of millions of dollars were to be spun out into a standalone entity. And as you go through the portfolio, there are more and more specific assets that can add additional value beyond the relative valuations of their cash flows. So I look at it more holistically, where if there's specific assets that aren't generating royalty cash flow within the portfolio, you want to subtract those out of the enterprise value so you can get the proper sense of how much they're being valued specifically for their producing royalties. And then I like getting stuff for free. So at least in the case of Elemental Altus, I think you're paying a more than fair or very reasonable price, or a bargain relative to peers, I should say, for their producing royalties. And then you get a bunch of potential value creation for free. And I like those opportunities because we know in the junior mining space, when things go well and a discovery is made, there can be absolute asymmetric upside. And in the case of Elemental Altus, I don't know where within the portfolio it will occur, but if you exercise this business model with discipline over years and years and years, very exciting opportunities spring out of the woodwork. And from my perspective, it's just a matter of time before that occurs for this type of name.
All right, Matt, we are out of time for this segment on the weekend show. But again, thank you so much for sharing what you like in your portfolio, just how heavily weighted that MJG portfolio is towards these companies that, as you said, do limit dilution, which, boy, oh, boy, I think we've all sat in some of these other companies, especially juniors, and have just seen that share count explode. So, Matt, thank you, as always, for your time. Everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Please keep in touch with Shad and I through email, and be sure to go back through our website and podcast throughout this week to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded. We love hearing from each and every one of you, and we hope that you all have a great rest of your week.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid, too, even if they've applied in the past.
Enrollment is always open. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.